everybody. Welcome back to the Gadget Show podcast. My name is Susie Perry.
I'm Jason Bradbury, and it is great to be here. We've got an exciting episode lined up for you, packed with the latest and greatest tech, and probably a few laughs along the way.
Hopefully so, yeah. But before we dive in, we want to give a big shout out to our amazing partner, JBL, and their latest Tour Pro 3 earbuds. Honestly, I love this little charging case. It's got this digital display, and it's so easy to answer phone calls and change tracks and things
like
that.
I love the colour, full colour display. It's epic. I particularly like the, well, it's a combined battery life, okay, of 44 hours, which is really, really impressive.
And can I just say, they're also really comfortable because I've worn them for hours while I've been travelling. Very important.
You don't half travel.
Oh, I do.
They stay in at the gym as well. And the six microphones that they've got, which is
crystal
nuts.
Crystal clear.
Really good for answering phone calls and all the rest of it. So yeah, big fan. Thank you very much, JBL.
And if you want to take a deep dive into what makes the Tour Pro 3 earbuds so special, our very own John Bentley has made a little film review on YouTube and you can check it out now.
All right, so I think that's probably enough earbud love for now.
But can you ever have too much? Let's
get into today's episode. It's going to be a little bit chaotic, but definitely tech-packed and lots of fun.
Let's jump in. So this week on our podcast, we're discussing the history and future of the TV. Former toy designer and now YouTube superstar James Bruton is in the studio to discuss his latest projects. And for our gadget of interest, we've got GoPro's latest action camera, which I'm very excited about. But first, here are a few questions from our lovely audience.
Yeah, we're a big fan of all of your communications, your comments, messages. So keep them coming. We read all of them, including this from Fuzzy Semi
on X,
who said, actually, a lot of people ask this, don't they, Susie? Is when are you back on the TV?
Yeah.
So I guess we've probably got different answers. I don't know. I'll give you my answer. I'm not going to do the gadget show again on telly. I left the gadget show whenever I left, and I left television as well. And I absolutely loved it, and I wanted to be on television my whole young life. And then I did it for 20 years or whatever on all different channels, but obviously the gadget show was the big one. But now I feel personally, much as I enjoy a little bit of television, the action is elsewhere on the social media platforms, on the podcasts. Mm. And so that's my preference.
I think, obviously, the Gadget Show is still going now under a different guise. It's a completely different show now, Shop Smart Save Money, which Otis is still a part of. I think that often TV has a shelf life. And I think we were in the Gadget Show personally, I think when it was absolutely incredible and at its peak with, you know, more than a million people watching it and the live shows at the NEC and all
and
that kind of stuff.
And tech was at its peak.
And tech
the novelty.
Consumer
of,
was king at that time, and we were on a wave. We were surfing that tech wave.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. You know, I think it's easy to go, like, oh, get back on TV. We loved it. But it's quite nostalgic to say that because TV also isn't what it used to be. And I like the fact that we're growing something new here on a podcast, and we're starting small and we're getting bigger each week.
Yeah, it feels like the early days of the Gadget Show, strangely, but we're just on a podcasting,
it's a series of
podcasting platforms, and that's all I want.
And
really,
we will have our guests. We will have John and Otis and co. You know, they will come and join us, which is lovely. But I think in answer to that question, we're not going to ever see it back on the television again.
No, it's a good question. No, don't feel sad because we've got lots of other ways of communicating.
Exactly that. So Gareth Ross on the Patreon, he says, when on the road, other than a phone, what gadgets are your go-to choices?
Great question.
Must-have travel accessories. And how has that changed since you were both on the Gadget Show on the TV? Are you finding that you're carrying less or more technology?
I carry just as much. I carry just as much because I'm a glutton for it. It's a great question, actually.
Yeah.
I really love my travel tech.
What's in your bag?
Well, let me answer that. What I've got this week is I've got a Steam Deck. With me, I've got my Steam Deck. I like to play my Steam Deck, and I've got my laptop, and that's because I'm involved in some business things at the moment, and I need a full keyboard, and so I'm watching my content, which I love to consume on the laptop, doing a bit of work, and then gaming on the Steam Deck. But what I used to, because the question includes what did you used to have?
How's it changed?
Well, I was all Apple, wasn't I? Mm. And for a time, the iPad was just the perfect do-it-all piece of tech. It probably still is. But I can't afford to buy an iPad at the moment because I've already got a laptop. what I love about the iPad is that you can consume content, you can create content or reply to emails or to your website or whatever. You can also play games. So that would be a really good... And whatever, you know, Samsung and LG and God knows who else are doing it on tablets as well. But I was a big Apple fan when I was on the Gadget Show, so that was different.
Okay.
What about you?
So for me, I'm just going to try and think now and go through what I take. So first of all, I take an electric toothbrush because they last...
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, because they last now for weeks. I mean, I've just been away for 4 weeks working and my toothbrush is still going as strong as ever. It might not have been doing 20 years ago when we were on the Gadget Show testing them. So that's one of my things. So I've got my phone, I've got my laptop. I've got my Tor Pro 3s. So my earbuds, which is brilliant when I'm on a plane because they block out all the noise, all the annoying announcements and everything. So I can watch my Netflix or Apple or whatever I'm watching at the time. I've also got that little DJI Neo drone.
Oh, yeah.
The Follow Me drone. Because I wanted to test it and
cool.
See how it works.
Oh, I'll tell you what, one more thing I'd add. Mm. I always take my OmniCharge with me, which is this sort of, it's about the size of two slices of thick white bread. It's like a charger, but it's like the best charger ever, right? It's got USB... C on it. Yeah. It's got wireless charging, so I can just put my phone on the top of it. It's got a ton of other ports, but it's so powerful, I can even charge my laptop off it.
See, I've got one of those chargers, but mine was £20. I bet yours was much more than that, and will do it it's 10 times faster than mine.
It's a couple of £100. I'm not messing about. It's an expensive bit of kit, but it's really heavy duty. You get multiple charges. You can run the Steam Deck off it. You can run your laptop off it. You can run a camera off it. Lights, if you're out doing content or you know, filming. It's a really serious bit of kit, and I wouldn't go anywhere without it. So great question, though, don't you think?
Yeah, that is a great question. Thank you so much, Gareth. And I also take, if I'm on holiday, a DSLR with me to take some nice pictures. Right, moving on. I want to talk a little bit, just have a discussion about TVs.
Okay.
Because the point is, when we started 20 years ago, we were really excited about the hardware of a television. It was changing from a big, massive, chunky CRT television that we all had in cabinets in the corners of the room where we all used to sit around and watch appointment-to-view television.
Yes.
This was only 20 years ago, okay? I remember John Bentley, for example, having one of the first plasma TVs.
Yeah.
And it was, you know, it was a bit chunky.
It was chunky, yeah.
But to us then, that was a slim telly.
Oh, yeah.
And he took a chainsaw and he cut through so we could have a look at the technology inside.
Incredible.
Yeah, and they've gone through different iterations over the years. Obviously, the flat screen and HD revolution.
I mean, I remember us getting super excited about HD and doing comparisons in the early episodes of The Gadget Show between it and even CRT, cathode ray tube TVs that could do HD. I'm sure we put it up against those. And then we jumped to 4K, obviously. As
we had an OLED, obviously, in between that.
Yeah.
We were looking at how black the blacks were and all you know, how it changed. Well, literally every year it seemed to be changing, getting better and better and better in terms of resolution and size and the weight.
I remember going to South Korea.
I remember you going to South Korea.
And seeing an organic light emitting diode demo screen that was the size of a tea bag, Susie. Mm. That's how small the television was then, right? So now we move to 4K and 8K. You can go to a high street store and have an 8K demo of a TV. The question is, though, are we buying them? And what's the future of that technology?
This is my point. So obviously we've had streaming smart TVs with the integration of apps and everything else.
Yeah.
And I think streaming has changed the landscape so much.
Massively.
Because, you know, we all have become bingers, but we've almost gone full circle. And I've noticed recently that there are a lot of dramas being made that are only being released on a weekly basis, which is almost like going full circle to that appointment to view. People almost don't want to binge. They do, but they're kind of like being held back. They have to be saved from themselves and wait on a weekly basis. I personally prefer that as well. And it's annoying when you get to the episode and you haven't got another one
to watch.
But it makes it more... If you binge, you can't remember everything.
You can't. It's this notion of scarcity, which is interesting because even in some hardware gadgets, right, like some sort of, you know, Kickstarter-funded sort of remake of the Walkman or something, right, scarcity is often built into those devices because it makes them more valuable, right? And there is another challenge to our TV habits. streaming, live streaming. That didn't exist, did it?
No, of course
I mean,
not.
Really, in any meaningful sense, as an alternative to sitting down with the family and watching something on the telly, streaming only really came along in lockdown. I remember in lockdown suddenly becoming aware of platforms like Twitch or YouTube live content or Instagram live content and TikTok. I mean, oh my God, the TikTok phenomenon has to be one of the biggest challenges to, you know, grabbing the eyeballs of the available public and getting them onto your TV show, whatever it is.
Yeah, because that's their go-to for a lot of people. They go to TikTok, don't they, to learn about X, Y, or Z.
And of course, it retrains people with regard to their attention span.
Yeah, maybe not in a good way.
I'm not saying good or bad. I mean, I tend to agree it's probably not very good. Mm. I mean, the speed of the edit, the way the editorial message of a TikTok video just hits you between the eyeballs in a few seconds. I've not seen any scientific objective evidence for this, but it would seem to be the case that people's attention spans are reducing. I don't know. I've got to be careful. I don't want to just harangue TikTok.
No, but TikTok. They are, though, aren't they? Because everything has to be made now in a short format. There isn't such thing as long format because the attention span isn't there. That's what we're constantly told. And the new generation that's coming through, they're used to succinct bites.
I mean, yes, that's what we maybe think. I don't know how objectively that is the case. I just don't know. I mean, it does feel like to get someone's attention in the YouTube, TikTok age, you've got to get to the point really, really quickly.
Well, let me tell you this. In my experience on MotoGP and in Formula One, they do a sprint race. And the reason is they're trying to attract a new audience. And to attract the new audience, they have to do a shorter format.
That's just nuts.
So that's a global sport, and that's but then what they're
we
doing.
Do. But then we do have these extraordinary shared experiences, right? Even though they're shared in a slightly different way, like Stranger Things or The Crown. Even I've watched The Crown.
Have you? I'm surprised you.
Yeah, I know. It was the Lady Di years that, and this is not a joke. I'm being serious. That brought me in, and I like a shared experience. One of the few things that we genuinely share, apart from holidays and mealtimes, with our teenagers, actually are things like Stranger Things, not The Crown, although my wife and my daughter might experience something like that, and movie night. You know, we do a movie night thing. There's still that culture in our household. I wonder if that's shared by others. But I want to just make one point, okay? I know that we talk a lot about VR and augmented reality on this podcast, and I don't want to go down the same well-trodden path, right? Mm. But I will say this. Now, you'll remember the first gadget that we reviewed in the first episode of this podcast was the Apple Vision Pro. It's certainly the headline gadget, wasn't it?
Yep.
Well, quite recently, I had some time on my hands. I went to the Apple store in Regent Street, and I started chatting to the guy. He said, I saw that. It was really cool. And have you played with one? Have you bought one since? And I said, no. And I said, I wouldn't mind having a go. And he said, oh, we've actually got a slot. If you're around, you can come and have a play now. So I went upstairs, and I would encourage anyone to do this. It's free to do. You normally book a slot, but they had a slot free. Now, I got it on my head and I said to them, look, I've already done this, I've already done that. I don't want to do the T-Rex thing again, blah, blah, blah. And he said, oh, have you seen this? And the sports content. So I was courtside at a basketball match. And then I was pitchside for a soccer match. And Susie, oh my God, I suddenly saw the future. And I suddenly thought to myself, oh wow, okay, this is a new platform. It's so immersive, so clear.
Yeah.
Even for a non-particularly sporty chap like me.
So it puts you in the grandstand.
Honestly. I mean, imagine going to see Depeche Mode in concert at the O2, except, you know, you're in the best possible seat. I mean, you're in a seat you can't even buy. I mean, if you said to me, and I'm being serious now, you could see Gary Newman, you know, or the Human League at the Albert Hall.
You're so funny.
And you can be...
Yeah, but you are still in the 80s.
I so am.
I know, I love
that. What I'm saying is the things that are hard to find, you know, like the Oasis gig. Okay. Let's say that they did a gig with the forthcoming Oasis tour. Mm. And you could be on the tour bus with the guys. You could go walk through backstage with them. And then you could be in whatever seat is regarded as the best seat in the house for the concert. And it's 35 quid, right?
Yeah.
You could sell, I don't know how many, 200,000 at that price. You could raise revenue for the record company and the consumer, me, I'd get a great experience. Now that's a new form of television, I think. What do you say to that?
Well, I was going to say, what is the future of television? And you're just saying it right there. I mean, yeah. Of course, it is going to be. It is going to be that, 100%. I mean, there's talk of holograms and all this kind of technology. Go on.
Well, okay, sorry. I'm getting excited. Look out, everyone. HoloLens, right?
Yeah.
You remember from Microsoft, right? And then Magic Leap, the other augmented reality, sort of mixed reality platforms. I remember I was actually at the University of Lincoln. I was in the design department where I did some work for a while. And they bought one of these Microsoft HoloLens. And they're all excited. They said, oh, Jason, you'll love this. Put it on my head. The first thing I thought, well, it's got a very narrow field of view. It's almost like looking through a
tunnel.
Tiny, tiny space. But one of the demos it had was a whodunit. And there was the outline of where a dead body had been. You know, like the crime scene in the market. Yeah. And it was obviously, it was in the studio. It was in the design studio at Lincoln University. The whole point was, it was kind of, sort of mapped to the floor of the actual studio. So it was like someone had died in the place that I was actually standing for real. And the outline of their body was there. And it was like a detective game thing, right? Mm. That was quite a profound experience for me because I started to think, well, what if the next generation of movies, you know, make use of the real world and augmented reality and much better visuals like the Vision Pro as opposed to the rudimentary Microsoft HoloLens. And we start to have interactive crime dramas. And you're walking in and out your own rooms, going upstairs where the crime scene extends. I'm just saying, if you're imagining the future, it's not as bonkers as it sounds.
I think what's interesting is it's a generation thing. So what's easy about television is you sit there, you switch it on and you watch it. You don't have to put on a headset.
Yeah.
You don't have to think. It's just in front of you. And you know how to change channels. So the older... I'm just going to be a bit generational here.
Because
I think it's important. And those guys that watch linear TV, and, you know, there are some things I still watch on TV with my dad, although, interestingly, the things I watch with my dad are streamed. So I'm getting him to watch Yellowstone, Slow
Great.
Horses.
Great
you know,
series.
We love watching those together.
Couple of series, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. And Slow Horses is an appointment to view, by the way. That comes in on a weekly basis, which, you know, I really like watching that with my dad. But if my dad had to put a headset on, he's not going to do it. So it's not for his generation. And it's probably not for some of our generation. So if you're over, I don't know, 40, 50, it might not appeal to you to wear a headset to watch your entertainment. It might do. But certainly going back into the new generations that are coming through, that is the way it's going to go, isn't it? And it's no wonder that TV companies are really struggling because they're not getting the advertising revenue. Because revenue now can be pinpointed so much on podcasts, on various different platforms, on YouTube, whatever it may be, they know where their audience is. And the data now that they get, it's so detailed.
Yeah.
It's no wonder, you know, ITV is struggling and Channel 4 is struggling. They are struggling. And BBC, you know, what's going to happen with the BBC and the licence fee, all these kind of things are going to affect television and how it's watched. And it's completely changing. I don't know how it can be saved. I really don't.
Yeah, but they've got to serve their audience, right? Mm. And they've got to provide what people want. And we know,
and it's an aging audience.
It's an aging audience, and that audience has none of the loyalty to the BBC. Like, there is such nostalgia around so many of their IPs that now just won't exist. My teenagers have no loyalty to any particular TV channel or show. At all. Their loyalty is to content creators and YouTubers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's going to be a very interesting evolution. Fascinating stuff. And it comes as no coincidence that our guest today is actually a YouTuber.
True. Right, now it's time for this week's guest. And we've got a YouTube superstar in James Bruton.
James, welcome to the...
Right,
mate.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. All the noises. Thank you for coming in.
Well, maybe I should do that in my channel.
You need that.
No, or not.
Popular. Yeah.
You don't need to take any tips from us, my friend.
James, you've got over a million
You're doing
followers
great.
On YouTube. Amazing channel. You're known for your robots. But I want to go back a little bit.
Yes.
To mm-hmm. your days of IT and toys. Just take us through the journey on how you've got to where you are now.
Oh, well. So, I started doing, as an adult, building robots in about 2004. And that was before YouTube. So
yeah, that's when we started the Gadget Show, 2004, yeah, right, so 20 okay. years ago.
So I was looking for a website about how to build human-sized bipedal robots easily, but I couldn't find one. So I decided that I'd make that website and I'd work out what to do. And so I was sort of like cutting up wood and things. This is before you could get cheap stuff from China on eBay and AliExpress and all this. So I think eBay was probably around, but, you know, it's mostly wood from Wix and skateboard wheel bearings and electric drill motors. And I thought at the time, it'd be really good if I didn't have to spend all this money, if it could somehow fund itself. So I started doing this blog on xrobots.co.uk that's still kind of there now. So I was building robots and doing all sorts of things. And then the movie Iron Man came out in 2008. Mm. I decided that actually I'd like to do a cosplay, because this is before everyone had published CAD and everyone had 3D printers, yeah. and you could just download and print it. So I decided I'd build an Iron Man cosplay, because hardly anyone had one. And in those days, it was sculpting clay and making molds and all those sorts of things. And I started putting this on YouTube, and that's pretty much where the first 50,000 subscribers came from. Because Iron Man was massively popular, big piece of pop culture, and no one else was really doing it. So I worked in IT for many, many years, since I finished university in 1997, different times in the IT industry, as you'd imagine. And I had one job for Aon Corporation, the Man U sponsor, like Wayne Rooney with AON on his shirt, big insurance company. I worked there for 10 years. It was actually another company that got bought out, but 10 years doing server support and data center stuff. And in that 10 years, YouTube came along, basically, and I started putting this stuff on YouTube, and I also 3D printing became more accessible.
Yeah.
RepRap project came out of Bath University in 2003, so I remember reading the early blog posts about them, you know, homebrewing this 3D printer that can make parts for itself, and things like Arduino and Raspberry Pi, and then, you know, a lot of Chinese sellers selling lots of stuff, electronic modules, lots of open source libraries, companies like Adafruit and SparkFun Electronics. All this stuff came along pretty much in those 10 years I was there,
yeah.
2004 to about 2015, something like that. And then a toy company found my YouTube channel and recruited me to go and work there doing prototyping. And that's Blades Toys in Portsmouth.
Oh, yeah, I've seen you talk about this on your YouTube
so
channel.
They're 28% owned by Peter Jones from Dragon's Den, so it's one of his best startup investments from another TV series he did called Tycoon in 2007. So it's basically Blades Toys and Reggae Reggae Sauce are the two successful startups that most people have seen on the telly.
Yeah.
So I did that for a few years, and I slowly dropped days to 2 days a week, and then went full time on YouTube in 2019. So it's been,
you know, what's interesting to me,
years or something. Right.
Is your journey, which you describe in terms of technological innovations, that's very interesting. I've never viewed the Gadget Show in that way, and on that same timeline, like, you know, Arduino, Raspberry Pi, and all those innovations that make a culture. That suddenly became a thing from about 2004, just as you put it. That's why our show evolved with our own homemade gadgets that we did, all the kind of you know, bonkers stuff that that Grant and James were doing, the guys that used to help us with the builds. We were following the same trajectory as you. I've never really thought about that before.
And it's like the stars aligned, really, wasn't it, for your YouTube channel? But how would you describe yourself now then? IT, engineer, I mean, and
well,
also
I'm
why robots?
I'm full-time on YouTube, so that's my job now.
Yeah, so YouTuber is the way you would describe yourself.
Yeah, and I mean, I spent years since though I first started doing that website in 2004, saying like, how am I going to make this pay for itself? Thinking, how, you know, I try and basically not to work for another company and do something for myself, doing what I want.
Yeah, and what is it about robots for you?
It's not necessarily all robots. Some of the things are vehicles, but they still have the same type of control systems.
Yeah, there
it's
is
because
a crossover.
I know about engineering. I'm not going to start a cookery channel, basically, you know. Yeah. So it's what I enjoy doing, and that's why I do what I enjoy as much as I can.
The reason I really like your YouTube channel, aside from your delivery, which I just like, I love the way you, I mean, when I said I recognise your voice, I was being serious, because I've watched a lot of your content.
Well, you put a lot of humour into it as well, don't you? Which is nice.
Oh, really? I'm not sure about that. Not as much as some people, but
yeah, it's your humour is very well.
It's not.
Pitched.
Let's put it like this.
It might be like an English thing that no one else gets. Then
no, there's an irony to what you do. That I'm with Susie on that. Can I ask you about the ATAC? Because
because you bought obviously the little ATAC with you.
Can you get it up on the table, or is there not enough room there? Do you want to just do that? Because our listeners and viewers are in for a treat, because this is, well, it's the childhood dream of so many people.
Yeah, so they made the toy roughly this size for whatever it is, 3 3/4 inch scale, the little, you know, classic Star Wars figures. Yeah. And they made it in the 80s for Empire Strikes Back, I think, whenever that second movie that came out originally. And then they remade them again in the 90s, 2006, and again for Rogue One quite recently. So it's like multi-generational pop culture.
Yeah.
You know, like fathers and sons and grandfathers have also, you know, everyone knows what an AT-AT is, right?
Everyone loves an AT-AT,
everyone, even if you've not watched Star Wars, you know what it is because it's a piece of pop culture. But they never made one that walked. So they made the toy, but you had to move the legs with your hands.
Manually,
so there's the original, yeah, the original TV ad. There's two kids trying to make it walk because they need four hands, and you put your hand inside to operate the head and everything. There was a toy by Thinkway that kind of walked, but had quite floppy legs, and it rotated its back legs like this to steer,
right,
which was a lot of money because those sorts of toys cost a lot. Anyway, so I was like, let's make one that's better, that walks
and
with
turns.
Proper robotics principles.
Yours turns, yeah. So,
yeah.
And how did you work that out then, that the turning thing?
I just, well, someone said in the computer game they turn, but I haven't seen it and I'm not sure if it's a, like, computer game physics are weird, so whether it's a bit hacky, I don't know, but I just worked out if we swing the legs, then we can pick up two legs and swing the others around, and then
it's fun.
And then pick up the next two and swing them to catch up.
And then you've gone a step further, and in your most recent video, as mm-hmm. we're filming this podcast, you've made an AT-AT that you can sit on. I mean, yeah, this is an extraordinary video, I think it's fair to say. Was it one of your most challenging builds?
It's one of the longest ones. So I used to do weekly videos. I think this was a weekly or two weekly video. I've dropped back to try and do monthly so I can do bigger builds, but this was actually 2 episodes, so it was 2 months, which is one of the biggest ones I've done.
What was the challenge in that? Because obviously, was it a replica? I mean, it sounds a bit stupid as a question, but was it an exact replica of this that we're looking at here in front of us, mini AT-AT?
Sure. So the gearing assembly that you can see in the legs here with these half gears and this little gear that run, and these are parallelograms, and they track perfectly because the centre, if the big gear was a whole gear, the centre and the centre of the small gear is the same distance as the top of the parallelogram, which is something I worked out ages ago. So it's the same gear assembly in the leg,
yeah,
but then there's much, obviously they're much bigger motors and lots of bigger plastic gears, but a lot of it is 3D printed still.
You mentioned the 3D printing there, which obviously aids you a lot in everything that you do on your channel, but how much does that keep the cost down? So for example, can I just be rude and ask you, like, how much it have costed to have made that AT-AT that you can sit on?
So yeah, everything's sponsored, but if you actually wanted to make one, I think probably £3,000 or £4,000.
The sit-on one?
Yeah.
That's not too bad. No, it's like a small car.
However,
have you been down the shops in it?
No, it does. Oh, so it only does 60 metres an hour.
So you'd need to live quite near the shops.
I've got a plan to double it, but that's still only...
And have a couple of hours spare.
At double the speed, it would still only be 8% of 1 mile an hour.
Yeah.
Do you think the Empire...
Not a speedy process.
But I'm interested. Did the Empire encounter the same issues?
They were pretty slow AT-ATs, weren't they? I mean, it's the most ludicrous thing, really, to use in a battle. Obviously, even in the movie, they just fly around with a wire.
Which brings me to my next question.
Go on.
Well, I've got the drone.
Oh, okay.
If you're willing for me to try and fly a cable, that would be my dream. That's what I thought when I watched the video.
So I'm going to probably do an upgrades video next year where we make it go faster and put a body on that I can sit inside and maybe put some sort of weapon system on it. I don't know what. We did have like the little snow speeder toy, and then my friend Matt Denton, who's another YouTuber, had it on a stick. And he rode round in the video. So we got the snow speeder eye view.
Shall we put our little AT-AT to one side?
Sure.
So we can just stop obscuring the view. How do you choose your projects? What's the criteria behind you going, I'm going to do this next?
Well, hopefully ones that do well. That's, you know, my job is making things people will click on. So you have to think of what the thumbnail image will be in the title.
Yeah.
And then no one else has made an AT-AT big enough to ride on, so... You can't really fail.
So, and you do lots of, because I was going to say the person that you remind me most of is Colin Furze, right?
Oh, okay.
But
well,
of
that's
course,
a, that's
you've,
a compliment, yeah.
Yeah, well, no, he's an absolutely amazing inventor. But you've actually shared videos with him on several occasions, haven't you?
I've done quite a few videos with Colin, yeah.
So the two of you together. Have you been in his underground bunker?
Yeah, sure.
Mm-hmm. Is it as impressive as it looks on YouTube?
It's pretty good. I mean, the fact that it's in a three-bedroom semi-house, you know...
That's what makes it funny.
Semi-detached house and not someplace in Kensington, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's got this car lift thing where he's going to have his car coming underground. Like, plenty of people have those, but not in a, you know, a semi in a residential area. So
I love it. James, what I'm interested in is if you can give us a bit of an exclusive... Right, just a rough idea of some cool ideas that you might be working on in the future.
So what's coming up? We've got the Maker's Secret Santa again coming out for Christmas. I can't tell you what I'm making or who it's for because it's a secret, and I don't know who's making for me, but that goes around. There's 12 makers around the world. Big loop where we all make a present for each other. So that'll be going out on something like the 18th of December.
Ooh, okay.
And then next year, well, probably one of the first videos is going to be another omnidirectional bike.
But instead that's an exclusive.
Omnidirectional wheels, it's going to have balls.
Okay.
Like BB-8 type thing, are we talking?
Yeah, probably. You can buy these balls called walking globes, which are for circus performances, like a juggler walking on a ball. Yeah. So you can get the balls. There'll be two of those. And it's like a bike with balls. So it goes sideways as well, like the screw bike, but they're balls.
Yeah, cool.
It's not cool. The riders that have got balls. But anyway, moving on.
Hey!
James, it's been just absolutely fascinating listening to you. Thank you so much for bringing your stories and your insight. It's been a joy.
No worries. Thanks.
Absolutely brilliant.
And good luck with the Secret Santa.
Thanks,
I mean, that's the kind of Secret Santa that you want to know about, right?
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for having me.
Good luck. Gadget of interest.
My favourite bit.
Are you ready?
I am so ready.
Okay, when I say action camera, what do you think?
Oh, GoPro?
Yes!
Probably, yeah.
Do you know when they started? In 2004.
Wow, so similar time to us.
Exactly.
Do you know what? I remember back in the day, this little silver camera that looked like a toy camera.
Yes, it did.
Didn't it? And it was the first generation GoPro. And I remember our production team sort of not believing that this little toy-like device from Fisher-Price
could bring some good quality images.
Yeah, and then we started sticking them on everything.
We had them everywhere. On the back, on all the time.
Yeah, underneath skateboards, on remote control aeroplanes.
On our helmets,
all over our bodies.
Well, yeah, maybe not. Yeah, moving on. Anyway, now they're on to the 13th edition.
That's incredible.
Looking for some, but not for GoPro, I don't think.
Well, it's got some interesting features.
It has. It had some great upgrades.
So the 6K, 60 frames per second, is impressive. But I'm more partial to the 5.3K at 120 frames per second. And if you're not into video, let me just explain. What that means is really good, silky smooth, slow-mo. Have you got one there?
I've got one here. I'm holding it up now, the little black box. Beautiful.
It features the front-facing screen and the rear-facing screen, which is not a new addition for the 13, but is super bright, super high contrast. And its performance, apparently in low-light conditions, has been improved, which was always a bit of a bugbear for me, the low-light performance of my previous GoPros that are a couple of generations away from the 13 was never very good. And what they're calling the Enduro battery, which they say offers 25% more recording time than previous models, even in extreme temperatures, hot or cold. Cold being the one that really does reduce your battery.
It's also hyper smooth now. So in terms of stabilization,
it
is the most advanced stabilization yet. It's called HyperSmooth 6. It makes it ideal for, you know, filming action sequences and biking and mountain biking, skateboarding, surfing, whatever. I mean, obviously the waterproof effect is still there as it always has been, which is fantastic.
Yeah, as you know, big surfer. Yep. Not good at surfing. I kind of suck.
You're a small surfer, but
doesn't stop me. Yeah, doesn't stop me trying.
You're a super surfer.
I absolutely love it. And my, you know, the model that I use at the moment is several generations earlier than this one, but it still blows my mind. The color reproduction, the way it deals with light, the way that the 120 frames in particular can make the water look, and my son as he comes past on his surfboard. I love it. So, yeah, it's a great thing with its, what is it, 10 metres it's good for now? The new one, 10 metres?
10 metres, 33 feet, yeah.
There you go.
What about the new software feature? Should we talk about the AI-powered editing?
Yeah, so this was a feature that I remember them bringing online a couple of gens back, where the app which is rather good. I mean, it was a little bit glitchy a few years ago, but it's a bit more stable now, where the app can intuitively produce an edit, right?
Yeah, so it makes the, it chooses the best clips for you, doesn't it?
Yeah, so what are they saying now? That the AI, that they've obviously they're spinning the AI into the whole PR mix, but what is it offering, like better choices?
It's choosing the best clips from your footage to create yourself some instant highlights.
Okay.
So you don't have to do the work. It's what basically doing the heavy lifting for you. Expanded voice control options, by the way, now. Supports more commands in multiple languages.
Well, I'll tell you, from a surfing action point of view, where I've used my GoPro Hero 10, or whatever it's called, for a long time. You or is it an 11? I might have an 11. And, the voice control thing, I wouldn't rely on it. I'm much happier to manually trigger it with my finger. But having a voice option that actually is reliable, I would go for that.
Well, it would be interesting to see how that has been improved then.
Yeah.
And also you can do it in multiple languages, which I know would suit you because you are bilingual.
Yeah, multilingual.
No. Wi-Fi 6, Bluetooth 5.2, faster wireless connectivity for quicker file transfers and more stable connections to smartphones and other devices.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Susie. Thank you. We're just passing this GoPro around to each other and filming ourselves on it, if you're listening, which is why we might sound a bit weird.
Yeah, by the way, during that whole sequence, for those of you on the listening side of our podcast, we were just filming with the camera.
So ideal, really, for adventurers and content creators, I suppose.
Yeah, very much so.
Who need a rugged, lightweight camera that can be used underwater or just wants to shoot high-quality footage in extreme conditions.
And unlike the Gadget Show, as we have done with previous editions of that particular technology, you probably don't blow it up. Not a good idea. Which I'm pretty sure we did on multiple occasions.
No, don't do that. But also, you know, if you are looking to capture cinematic video with minimal setup, then this is probably for you with its AI features. That would be good to do a little test on that. There we go.
Right, that's it for another week.
But we will be back in just 7 days.
I can't wait.
More tech for you.
Awesome.
Thank you to our partner, JBL, for supporting the show. And if you fancy watching a deep dive into the Tour Pro 3 earbuds, John Bentley's done one on YouTube for you.
Love a bit of John.
We love John Bentley.
Thank you, Susie. And thank you, of course, to you. And keep your comments coming in because, as you know, we read them all and you could get featured. And don't forget to check out our Patreon page. It goes a long way to supporting the show. That's it.
Lots of love.
See you next time.
The Gadget Show podcast with Jason and Susie was presented by Jason Bradbury and Susie Perry off the telly. It was produced by Ewan Keel and Tom Clint and is a North One production.